Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about improving relationships. And of course, that's what we always strive to do. We always strive to have a good relationship between our participants, between our leader, between whoever has some influence over what the outcome is going to be, right? Yes. But let's talk about it in a more specific manner. So what type of relationships do we see within our context that, of course, we need to be improved or made stronger? So what type of relationships within our context? Within the context of an alternative dispute resolution, a mediation, a workshop, a seminar, a negotiation, any kind of consensus building. What types of relationships do we see? Oh, I can see that we've got lots of people participating. Thank you all for being here. I'm going to say that the first type of relationship that we're going to be talking about is going to be, because of course this show is unscripted, it has to do with what people send in, is going to be a business relationship. And I think it looks like it's going to divide out into three different subtopics under business. How about management team? Yeah, a lot of people are talking about the managers, making a team and then making rules, perhaps. How about a union group, a union or an organizational relationship? The first one was management. They're all the same level, and they've all got the same basic kind of training, really. And the next one, unions and organized labor, organized groups, really, and might not be labor, which is unions are organized labor. And type of relationship under business, I'm going to call it real world, right? Real world, where in the room you're supposed to all be equal and team members and like that. But in the outside world, you're kind of unequal. And since we all live in the real world and the negotiation process is just a part of it, well, that may have an impact now, doesn't it? It needs to be strengthened. What other kind of improving relationships do we have? What are the kind of relationships do we see? I'm going to call this prior relationships, relationships from before, because a lot of people are talking about a personal relationship. Romantic maybe, but personal, yeah, outside of work. Yeah. Might not be romantic, might be good friends, or maybe have gotten a fallen out, whichever way. Prior relationships, we're going to talk about business relationships also, right? Yeah, we're going to talk about business first, but it's a prior relationship within business, right? Yeah, on unrelated issues usually, people have worked together. Nothing to do with this particular issue, but we formed an opinion about each other, didn't we? By our prior dealings, our prior relationship. You know, this is a surprising one. Under prior relationships, quite a few people are talking about what I'm going to call those team-building events, the kind where you kind of get sent by your employer and you're supposed to have like a weekend boot camp on team-building. Yeah, and then that would be a prior relationship too. Yeah, especially if you didn't catch them. Yeah, I got that. And I think our third big area that folks are talking about, I'm going to call it membership in either a similar group, because you have the similar ideas, or a very different group from each other. Yeah, very different. People talk about religious and cultural. You know, the United States is having kind of a contentious election for president pretty soon. And so we're all thinking about political stuff. So people are talking about political and philosophical group membership. Yeah, not so much membership in an actual group, but membership in a mindset, membership in a similar idea of what should be. And then also, of course, the group membership, there's actual membership organizations. Yeah. Membership organizations that you can actually willingly join, or maybe not so willingly if your employer insists. So let's look at these one by one. And since we're practical people and we like theory as next, well, as the next person, but we're really rather practical, let's see if we can find solutions on what to do about these things. Right. So let's look at business management team first. That was our first one up because it was the most talked about. Yes. You know, this is a good point, and it is a very widely held perception, and quite frankly, I imagine a truth also, but also a widely held perception, which is also perceived as truth. Muhammad and others are saying that when you have a business management team, it's isolated from the workers whose fate they are deciding. Business management team is isolated from the workers whose fate they are deciding. Yes. And that's interesting because they have relationship with each other, but don't they need to reach out and have a relationship with the employees also? Yeah. Elizabeth and others are saying that that's really a preconceived notion of what the employees want or need. Yeah, management sits up in the offices, and they don't actually know much about the employees, maybe, or maybe what they want or need, right? Yes, but they are making rules, as Mohammed said. Let's think about that for a moment. If you are the person brought in to assist with this, right, and you are not really part of the management team, usually, you are third-party impartial, especially when they are having some contentious issues, right? Just because they're on the same level does not mean they necessarily agree with each other. It just means that they come from a similar starting point. And you have a kind of a base understanding of what's going on. So, let's think about that. What do they need to do? Yes, thank you. I say this all the time. I get brought in, and I see this especially with organizations. This is a good example, kind of like a management team example. The management team of the organization, and I'll use Rotary as an example because it's true, and I sit in, I'm not particularly the leader, but I'm a participant. I sit in on the meetings. And the organization is kind of aging, right? So they're trying to attract new members. They're losing some through attrition, as in passing over to the other side, and some through retirement. You know what I mean. It's not getting that much. It's kind of getting smaller. So they sit at meetings, at committee meetings, which is like a management team, right? And they talk about what to do about attracting younger people. Nobody in that room is a member of the younger people group, and I include myself. Nobody, they don't, we're guessing. It's like third-party hearsay. We're guessing at what they want because nobody is one and nobody's asked one. And I always sit there and I say, how come we don't ask them? Then we'll know what it is that they find attractive, what it is that they would like out of Rotary, what it is that would keep them as a member or bring them in as a member. Let's ask them. Yeah. And so we're not so isolated, and so we don't just guess and then put something out that is unappealing, right? Yeah, because we've just guessed at it, actually guessed. When we have young Rotarians in the organization, we can ask. Yes, let's invite them to the table. Let's invite the employees to the table, right? Yeah. Let's have some input. Let's have a representative from their group. Yeah, that they've chosen, that they voted on. Right? Yes. Mm-hmm. Thomas and others are saying that when you have a management team, right, and they have their own, they have their prior relationships, good, bad, indifferent, but they know who each other are, and they've dealt with each other before, right, because they're a certain level in the corporation. When you've got the management team, Thomas and quite a few others are saying that they are resistant to new ideas because they've already made up their minds. They are resistant to new ideas because they've already made up their minds. A lot of you must see these kind of management groups that are kind of creating policy without asking the people whose policy they are making. The people are going to have to live with it. Sometimes they are kind of funny resistant to change. I deal with a lot of multinational corporations. And you'd be surprised. The higher up you get, the more resistant to change they feel, quite frankly, because they're doing just fine on what's there, right? That's why they're management. That's why they're important. That's why they don't like change so much. Because if you allow change, well, then you've allowed change, right? And they might get changed. And they don't want to. Reham and others are talking about the fact that when you deal with kind of an upper-level management group and they have a prior relationship and they're kind of tight against outsiders, right, it's because they're seeking validation. I suppose that's true. They're seeking validation of their own power, of their own job, of their own seat at the table. And validation should not be automatic, validation of their power. It should be brought to the attention that they're not being cooperating, right? And if there's nobody higher because they are the management team and there's no boss that you can go to, yep, sometimes, and you have to do this with some care. I'm always very cautious about doing this and try to think it through because, you know, the law of unintended consequences. Sometimes things don't go as we intended them to. It seemed obvious. But when it came down to it, it really wasn't. So do this with caution, but it might be a moment to bring it before the public via the media. That they will not budge, right? Yeah. And to also get other opinions, expert opinions, as to what it is to do that will cause the process to go forward. And allow them to get validation for their jobs, for their position, for their power. Yeah, people like that just love validation. They love to be told how important they are, even though they kind of know. So let's go on to the next one, because we are going to introduce to our first one with the management teams the idea of let's go ask, right? And then let's not just pat ourselves on the back that we asked, but let's actually do something about it. Let's actually think about it. The next one that we talked about was unions and organized groups. Kind of similar to the management team in the fact that they need validation and they've got kind of power going. Whoever is in charge doesn't want somebody else to somehow usurp him or her. Got to always watch your back, right? Yeah. So a lot of times unions and organized groups are management teams for a certain purpose, maybe to get more money, right? Nicholas and others are saying unions and organized groups are always in direct conflict with management teams, which we just talked about. Management teams being the notion that we're all managers and we're all going to go forward, right? We're all a level of employment. But the organized ones, the unions, same idea, right? They have, and they're often in direct conflict, as Nicholas says, with the management teams. You've got management teams, and then you've got unions and organized groups. Direct conflict, at least on paper. We're going to have to get them together and see that everyone benefits, right? Direct conflict with the management teams. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Hiromitsu says that they have their own interests and their own power base. Good point. Yes, their own interests and their own power base. Don't want to give it up. Don't want to show weakness. Let's ask for something really hard to get, right? Ask for something that might not ever be gotten. And then you won't have to give up any of your power, right? Because you'll say you did it the best you could. Mm-hmm. This is a good point that Eden and others are making, that a lot of times unions and groups like that, they've got voting, right? Mm-hmm. A voting maybe for the leader or to oust the leader. Got a good press. Voting for the results of the consensus building. Voting for the terms of the contract and whether or not their followers will actually agree to it. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes voting for their actual job. Ooh, nobody wants to lose their job, right? Yeah. So you've got the unions and organized groups, a little different. They've got their own power base. They have to be appeased, and they have to come back to their constituents and say, look, we, my company, my personal effort, was very, very good. You need to use us all the time and get on retainer, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, this is an interesting point that Joan and Eden, several people actually, were making, that the vampire did not, the vampire, that the management teams, yeah, they did not have any idea. Sometimes the union teams don't either. It's like dealing with two vampires. Yeah. Yeah. People make little pictures of these. That the management teams and the union teams had no idea what either one of them wants. That's why they call us in. Third party impartial. Very important. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because, as Joanne and others are saying, that on both sides there's pressure to be more militant instead of conciliatory. Yeah, they got pressure to be monstrous, right? Yeah, people are calling them bloodsuckers. It's like, well, no, not really. Yes, they do want to suck each other's blood in a way because each has their bosses to go back to. The unions and organized groups, oftentimes they're voting constituents. The management teams, oftentimes the corporations, the boardroom, the people in power who employ them for lots of money. Yeah. So there's pressure to not be civil, and we will enforce the civility rules, yes, because we need to get them to consensus and to an agreement that everyone can live with, mm-hmm. And get past the grandstanding. Lots of grandstanding in this, especially public grandstanding. Mm-mm. We will not do it in private, in our group, with our participants. Mm-hmm. So, that's union and organized groups. Now, let's talk for a second about the real world. Mm-hmm. Now, it's kind of like jurors or something, because when the judge gives instructions to the jury, he or she, the judge, says, and you will disregard anything that you see in the news, the newspapers and like that, and only deal with the facts that are before you. Ah, gee. We're all human beings, right? We're not going to disregard all the juicy niblets that come out, especially if it's an interesting case. Mm-hmm. And the real world is like that on groups, right? Yes. As Hussein and others are saying, there's a strained environment because the pressure to conform to the bosses. A strained environment because of pressure to conform to the bosses, right? To the people in charge, to the people who, when you leave the sanctity of the group, they're going to have some power over your job, right? They're going to have some influence, and they're going to remember that you didn't side with them. Because we're all human and people are going to hold a grudge because we live in the real world. Unlike the management team, which is usually very cohesive, they don't have to worry about consensus. They just have to worry about what the employees will accept, mostly. But the real world issue is when they're unequal, there's an inequality within the group. Different levels of employment, maybe. Supervisors and clerks type deal. So it is strained, as Hussein says. Yep. Raymond and others are talking about the fact that the employees, when they are in a group of multi-levels, are afraid to voice opinions, and the leader needs to be trusted, right? Yes, that's the key to it. You, as leader, pardon me, let's take a sip of water. You, as leader, are the third-party impartial. You're the trusted advisor. You're the person that everybody can talk to. Very important, because you want to be able to say, look, anybody can come up and tell me anything, right? Yeah. I want you to have faith in me that I will sort it out. I will tell the group what needs to be told. And if this is an important fact, I will do it as an anonymous informational. Somebody told me, but I won't tell. I won't tell who. Because you don't want to insult any of the bosses if you're a employee, for example. Afraid to voice opinions. And the leader needs to be a trusted resource, as Raymond said. Yeah, Brooke and others are talking about anonymous input. Sometimes someone in the room has something really important to say that you'd like to know. And since you're not really in the profession of whatever it is that's being discussed, probably, you don't know all the nuances of how to do things and like that. And sometimes someone needs to tell you that what the plan is now can't be done from an actual physical reality. Well, they need to be able to tell you that. They need to be able to trust your confidentiality. Yes, sometimes I do indeed. People are talking about the anonymous Dropbox where you've got index cards and a pen and you can write down what you think and you can drop it in the Dropbox and it's real anonymous. Yes, if that is practical to your location and to the issues. It's not so good for a really complicated issue, but the leader wants to know. I do. And if you've explained it to me sufficiently that I can explain it to the bosses in the room, yes, and we can all go, wow, yeah, I want to know. We all want to know. It's just that sometimes people get kind of touchy if something was their idea and you go, no, that will not work because the wings are going to fall off. But that could be bad. Yeah. And you want to know why that is and how to correct it. Somebody needs to tell us, but nobody wants to stand up and say so. Anonymous input. You know, Wayne and others are talking about a privileged communication contract. There is such a thing, of course, that says that you will not divulge privileged communication of any sort and like that. There's like six boilerplate sentences that go with it, but that is the crux of it. I've seen them. I suppose technically they're enforceable, but they're usually for technology and stuff. Not for this, not for a real-world unequal encounter, right? And then the boss mails to himself, herself, the information that they don't want anybody to know. Privileged communication contracts are good for liability, right? You showed something to somebody. they are not real world enforceable.
Yeah.
Because how are you going to do that? Privileged communication contracts. They don't work with humans because humans like to say things. They like to gossip. Yes, and so that is also a power play, really, that they make everything privileged. We're going to lay it all on the table. If you are important enough to be at the participant table, you are important enough to know all of the facts. Now, let's look to the next kind of relationship. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. People are asking about the anonymity of the comments and like that. Please don't put anything rude on the internet or anywhere else because it'll come back to haunt you. But the actual terms, they're not really privileged communication, right? Because we're negotiating them. Yeah. So let's go on to the next one. It's prior personal and romantic relationships. Yeah. Quite a few people, Wayne and Suki and others, are talking about putting restrictions on people contacts, right? Like no dating. I'm thinking about it. I've never seen one of those contracts actually work. Maybe people are more cautious. But when, you know, the old expression, the heart chooses what the heart chooses, and a lot of you are actually bringing that expression up, and thank you, it's a really good one, Suki and Nicole and others, are talking about the fact that sometimes people have a prior relationship and that the fact that the employer has banned it makes it more exciting, makes it more likely. It's like, ooh, we're not allowed to do this. Let's do it, right? Right. And they're a problem both ways. They're a problem if you're still in love, or in like, at least. And they're a problem if you're out of love and kind of in the hate mode, right? The one where you're really crazy about each other, it makes for cliques, exclusionary little groups that are annoying and disruptful to the group as a whole. I will actually separate you. And then there's the strain, right? Mostly office romances are not allowed by corporate policy. There's the strain of keeping it secret. Nobody knows. No, everybody knows. It's never a secret, but they think it is. And that puts strain on the group because they're trying so hard to act nonchalant. They dislike each other. If you can dismiss one or the other or both, right, from your group. If you cannot, then we're going to still act businesslike within the group, right? Right. I love click. Yeah, it creates tension. Hey, clicks create tension too. What do we need to do? Haseen and others are talking about enforcing the civility rules. Yes, we're going to enforce the darn things. Now, what are civility rules? Well, they're the only rules the Recipe for Peace now really has. And at their core, the civility rules say, we will not be rude to one another, right? We will not be rude to one another. We will not let a prior personal relationship, a unreal and unrealistic worldview about levels, right? A business situation, relationships, yes. We're going to enforce the civility rules on all of them. The civility rules fairly simply say we will not be rude to each other. Rude. We will not roll our eyes, sigh, jingle things, pay no attention, use the little laptop computer. No. We are going to enforce the civility rules. Everybody will be treated respectfully. Everybody will be treated in a get their turn everybody will be treated well, and everybody will be listened to, and we will consider all reasonable options. Yes. They were talking about the repercussions of being uncivil. There are lots of them, actually, and of the real-world repercussions. You need to be a team player for these things, and team playership is popular, right? And we need to be, and so the civility rules apply in all directions. Now let's go into our next one, because otherwise we're going to run out of time and we're not going to be able to do the recipes. And I know you guys like them. And the next one is kind of a membership, a group membership. We belong to either a very similar group or the same group, right? Or we belong to kind of an opposing group, right? Yeah, something that's kind of different. And maybe even been taught from childhood. So we think that what we are seeing is truth. And the other people just don't see it because they're not married yet. Yeah. So what we perceive as truth and prior relationships and civility has to do with our group membership too. And how we feel about different kinds of relationships. Because, quite frankly, you can have an informal question of philosophical ideas that are strongly held. Is that being a member of a group? Kind of. But they are philosophical questions. At the moment, the United States has a lot of kind of angst about politics. Most of us don't belong to a particular political party, and if we do, we don't really participate very much. We go and vote and we watch the debates and things like that and try to make an informed as the public gets decision. But we're not really participating like that. But sometimes you've got a philosophical issue, even politics, that causes an uncivil atmosphere in the room, in the group, right? Because it makes people kind of fight and kind of argue. And it makes no difference probably to the issue, so we're not going to let it get out of hand, right? Yeah. I say, you know, that's very interesting. We all have our views. Nothing to do with the present issues. Let's get back on track. Yeah, if you could talk about this over beers later. Yeah. And when we have any kind of philosophical question, we've always got some people with a preconceived view of the truth, right? They've seen it all. They've done it all. They've got a preconceived view of the truth. What if their preconceived view of the truth is not yours? Let's have some little conflict resolution there and improve our relationships. Yeah. One of the best ways to do that is to actually ask, as a lot of you are saying, ask the 5W questions. Who, what, where, when, and why? Why do you think that, right? Let's find out the underlying cause that our participant is so very excited by a certain issue, so very excited that they know that they're right. Yeah. And everybody else is inherently wrong. Let's break out the 5W questions. Let's find out the base. Because if we can find out the base, if it's made by grandma, if it's shapey, yeah, and kind of what it is that you're supposed to do, right? And what it is that's shaping this opinion. Done by your parents, your grandparents, your religion, your culture, your business culture. Ha, that's a whole different story, isn't it? What you think you're supposed to be doing. We'll break out the 5W questions, who, what, where, when, and why. And then we're going to find out the reasons, right? And then we'll find out who's got what kind of group membership, And then we're going to make it very clear that at this time, for this group, with these issues, that is, we're going to make an exception, right? We're going to do it, we're going to have consensus, we're going to get along for this group, this time, these issues, and this question. I don't care if you hate everybody on the outside world simultaneously. I can't fix that as leader, and neither can you. You need to have them be able to understand that this is the time where we're going to reach consensus on these issues. And we're going to go forward to a successful outcome. And the faster we do it, the faster we get rid of each other. And you know, that's oftentimes a revelation. The faster we get this done, the faster we go beyond our prior relationship and improve it, right? The faster we put aside personalities, the faster we come to our successful outcome, right? Yeah. And we can stop dealing with each other, for heaven's sakes. You know, that's a very desirable thing that people don't actually think about. I don't know why. Because it seems to me to be obvious, but it is not. It seems to be the least obvious thing. Let's get this done. And then we're done. Ha! Now, how are we going to make, we need to make a more convivial atmosphere if we're going to improve our relationships so that we can get something accomplished. And one of the ways that Recipe for Peace now advocates to do that is to have some food in the room, right? Yeah, because it gives us something to do that we're not going to fight over. Some food in the room. We're going to have a potluck. And if we're going to do that, you're going to need to take a survey to find out if anybody has an allergy, a food prohibition, or a type of food that they won't eat. Very important to know, because you don't want anybody to have a bad time. You disseminate the survey, right? You tell everybody the results. And then you say, when you come and bring the food, please bring a list, not what it's called, but what's in it, so that I can run my eye down it and see if it's something that I can eat. Or maybe I should stay away from, but I'll know what's inside of it. Yeah. So we're going to have those two things. Also, I think that as leader, we should have at least one safe dish. What's a safe dish? It has not too many ingredients, and my people would be familiar with the ingredients. Remember our list, right? And they would know that they can eat it, right? And we've taken the survey. So the safe dish is something that everybody can eat, and you might have an adventure one too that nobody's allergic to or has a prohibition to, but might be a little more adventurous. In my area, the chicken parmesan we're going to talk about right now is a safe dish. Now, in your area, curry may be a safe dish. You have to decide. I mean, it depends on what your people are used to eating. Yeah. So let's do this. We've left just enough time to do a recipe, because I know you guys like it. Yes. So this is chicken parmesan. This is our safe recipe. We're going to have six or so skinless, boneless chicken breasts that we're going to cut in half. You know how they're kind of folded because they're double breasts usually? If they're double breasts, cut them in half in the center there, right? Yeah, so that they're not cut into chunks but cut flat, because we're going to give them a little pound with a meat mallet in between two pieces of saran wrap, of plastic wrap, because we want to make them nice and thin. So cut it that direction, yes, down the breast, down the spine bone, so to speak. Let's have a nice egg, nice big one, lightly beaten. Oh, a tablespoon of water. about a cup of, I'm going to use Italian breadcrumbs. They're easy for me to get. And they have a delightful Italian, we're making Parmesan, right? Have a delightful Italian flavor already mixed in with herbs and things. You could also use crushed cornflakes or any kind of a crumbs that you like. I like the Italian ones. It's easy for me to get, too. So I know this is a global show, so sometimes things are not so easy. 2 tablespoons of grated Parmesan cheese, the real kind, not the kind that comes out of a weird container. Let's have 1/4 teaspoon of oregano. Just dried oregano that we're going to crush up. 1.5 cups of spaghetti sauce. If you would like to make your own marinara sauce, yours will be better than mine. But I'm going to just use spaghetti sauce out of a jar. It's perfectly nice and inexpensive and easy for me to get. And if I have to make the marinara sauce, I'm just not going to do this recipe, and that's the truth. Let's have 1 pound of pasta that we're going to cook al dente and drain. You guys know that I don't like messy pasta that needs tongs. I like contained pasta that uses a spoon because it is so much neater. Like a rotini or something like that. Let's get ourselves some more grated Parmesan cheese. We're going to put it on top. Still the fresh kind, not the stuff that's powdered. Okay. You're going to have those pieces of chicken, the boneless, skinless chicken breast that we've now cut. Let's take a piece of plastic wrap on both sides of each one, a little meat mallet, give it a nice pound. It doesn't have to be paper thin, about 1/2 inch thick or something. It needs to be uniform and kind of spread out because we're going to dip it and bread it, and so we don't want it to be lumpy. So we've done that to all of them now, right? Right, and we've cooked the pasta, right? Right, and put it aside. Now we're going to coat a baking pan with some nonstick spray, otherwise you're going to have a mess, or a bowl, right? Something that will hold the chicken kind of whole, kind of straight, something shallow. Let's combine the egg white and the water, and we're going to put the breadcrumbs in another similar shallow square pan, right? Because we're going to make assembly line, right? We're going to put the chicken in the egg mixture and then in the crumbs, both sides. And you know that baking pan that we sprayed with some nonstick spray? You're going to need the nonstick spray. I've stuck it to the pan. It's just not good, unless you have a nonstick pan. We're going to stick the chicken as we coat it right in there, right? It doesn't take too long to cook it. We're going to put it in the oven about 400 degrees, maybe 15 minutes. Because the chicken is thin now, right? And they're kind of spread out because you used a big enough pan. And we're going to cook it until it's done, until it's no longer pink, right? While we're baking the chicken, yes, you could deep fry it. I don't own a deep fryer, which is partially why I don't. And also, it makes it a lot greasier. I kind of prefer baking. People ask about a deep fryer. We're going to take the spaghetti sauce, put it into a nice little pot on the stove, warm it over a low heat. It gets cooked through, right? We're now got that pasta that was on the side. You might need to reheat it for a second because it gets cold really fast. We're going to mix our pasta sauce in with the pasta. This is a very simple recipe. Stick the lovely breaded chicken on top. You could cut it if we're going to have smaller portions, right? Stick it on top. A little bit more tomato sauce, maybe. Spaghetti sauce. Some nice grated Parmesan cheese. Look how easy that was. Delicious. It's pretty. It's easy to eat, easy to dish out, right? Yeah. We've got it. That is our safe recipe. And I've left just enough time for the adventure recipe, too, right? And the adventure recipe is going to be fish. That makes it an adventure recipe in and of itself, because quite a few people don't eat fish because they're allergic to it, or they just don't eat fish. But it's a white fish curry, which has two things adventure-y about it, because in my area, a curry is rather an adventure. So, this is a whitefish curry. Any kind of a firm whitefish, because you don't want it to come apart and just make mush. Around here, catfish and monkfish are kind of good choices. They are firm and kind of rubbery in and of themselves, but they cook up really nice in a stew, and they hold their shape. They hold their chunks, so to speak. So, let's have 3 pounds of whitefish that we're going to cut into cubes, kind of chunks. 2 teaspoons of curry powder. Let's have 1 teaspoon of paprika. When I use curry powder like that and paprika, when I use that kind of spice, I throw in a pinch of sugar. I think it's because my grandmother threw in a pinch of sugar, and that's the honest God's truth. I just think it tastes delicious. And it gives the kind of spiciness of the curry and the paprika kind of a mellowed idea to it. So let's put that in. Let's put a little pinch of sugar, just a quarter teaspoon, let's say. We've already got our whitefish chunked. Let's have a couple tablespoons of red wine vinegar. It tastes really nice in this. Makes the fish kind of bright. About a half a cup of all-purpose flour. 6 tablespoons of oil. A nice big sweet onion that we're going to finely chop. I like a Vidalia because they're nice and sweet. And then let's have about 2.5 cups of fish stock. If you don't have such a thing as fish stock, because it is a little unusual, use chicken stock. Yeah, you could use water, but why? Because it doesn't make any extra flavor, or vegetable stock. Do not use beef. It's too strong, and it's too brown. I don't know how to say that better, but it is. It's too brown. It doesn't look nice. It makes the fish turn a funny color. So, fish stock, the best, but you could use chicken stock or vegetable stock if you needed to. Let's have a nice red pepper, right? And a yellow pepper and a green pepper. Let's have them all. Yeah. Or you could have orange if you like the sweeter ones instead of the green. And let's core, devein, right? And chop them up. Kind of give them a rough chop, just like the onions and stuff, right? There we go. Now let's mix together the curry powder, the paprika, and the sugar. We're going to take the fish and put it in a glass dish. I say glass because if you put it in metal, it sometimes gets the tin taste. And take the fish mixture, spread it over, just sprinkle it over the fish. The paprika, the curry, and the sugar, mix it together. Just give it a sprinkle over the fish. Turn the fish over. Sprinkle again. Add the vinegar. Turn the fish over. Sprinkle. Turn it over. Cover this whole thing with plastic wrap because we're going to marinate it for a little while. And stick in the fridge for about an hour. Yeah. Yes, people are asking about using a plastic bag. If you use the dish, you'll lose less of your spices, right? And it'll coat more evenly. You know, sometimes we use a plastic bag to kind of shake things in, especially for breading and stuff, but not for this. You need to put it in the fridge in a bowl for about an hour. More would be better because it would make it more tasty, so at least an hour. We're going to spread out our flour, drain the fish as we come out of the fridge, and dip it in the flour to coat it. I like to spread the flour out on plastic wrap on a cutting board because then I can just pick it up and get rid of it when we're all done and we don't have fishy mess. So, drain the fish out of the marinade, dipped it into the flour, gave it a little shake if you needed to. Let's heat a quarter of a cup of the oil in a skillet. Add the fish. Make it hot, of course. Cook over medium for about 3 minutes each side. Take it out. Put it aside, hopefully on a paper towel so it doesn't get greasy. We're done now, right, with the skillet? Not quite. We're going to wipe it with a paper towel and add the remaining oil and then add the onion. No, we didn't forget the onion. Low heat, stirring, 5 minutes until it gets soft. We're going to add the You know what? Did I say that garlic? I like garlic cloves in this. I like garlic and everything. Two finely chopped garlic cloves. We're going to add that now with the onion, right? Another 2 minutes, right? And the peppers. And the fish back. Bring the whole thing to a boil. Reduce the heat. Simmer, 8 minutes? Not too long, because everything's pretty well cooked by now. But you want to make sure that that fish is cooked through and that it is flakes when you touch it. Sauce is thickened by now also because it's gotten the flour off the fish. Delicious. Smells good. You could finish this off in the room if you had facilities to do so, right? Smells very nice. Easy to do. Already prepped because you don't want to trust people with a knife. Too complicated. And there you have it. That is our adventure recipe. Primarily because it has fish in it. And fish is something that not everyone can eat. Yes, my friends, we are now out of time. Yes, we are. You know, I've gotten several questions while we were doing the recipe to go back to. I think we've got 3-4 minutes. Let's answer them for a second. People are talking about the real world issue, and they're wondering if the participants can be anonymous so that you don't know who's a higher up and who is kind of needs to be particularly cautious with their opinions. Sometimes this can be done if you are, for example, if you are not meeting in person and you are meeting in Skype, you can blind Skype it. It's kind of complicated in the sense that I'm not sure that I trust that that can be, that human beings can keep a secret. I don't recommend it. I recommend being, as leader, the third party impartial who everyone can talk to. Yes? That's what I recommend, to be kind of the clearinghouse for information. Because for heaven's sakes, we want to know it. Because sometimes somebody in the room is an expert, right? They're an expert because they've done it a lot. They've done it before. They've tried whatever it is that is being recommended, and it either didn't work or it needed to be tweaked. And we don't want to reinvent the wheel. We want to get to our successful outcome. Tell me as a leader, and I will tell the group the important information from an expert who I have spoken to. Got it? Yeah. So that it gets told, so that we know, but so that someone doesn't go against one of the bosses, right? Yeah, you can understand how that would be bad. So you have to take into account the real world. And yeah, you can sign the agreement that you did, privileged communication agreement and like that. Ah, gee. Those have no teeth to them, really. Because nowadays, especially, you can post kind of anonymously on the web and stuff and tell things. And nobody knows who to blame. So I'm not big on privileged communication contracts. I think they're nice. They make people think about it. And I see a lot of financial people and like that have the whole thing on the bottom of their emails. But the real world is such that you want to have people be able to make an anonymous suggestion that is important for us to know. Yeah. I'm also getting some questions about the prior personal romantic relationships. If you break out the 5W questions, which apply to everything in the entire world, we use them under group membership, but they apply. If you find out what's happening, I try, because I know that people have strong emotions about other people, right? Right? I try to separate them. Either if they're in love or if they're in hate, it doesn't make any difference. Because they're excluding the other participants and damaging our group dynamic. If possible, I have put one of them in a different group, if it's a seminar, workshop, or something. Don't have to be together. If it needs to be, they can both ask to be left, right? I don't like to show favoritism unless it is necessary due to people's positions, right? Like positions in the company. Might ask someone to come at a later date, to leave, if it's extremely intrusive, right? Yes. And the funny thing is that they never know that they're being extremely intrusive, but everybody else does. They think that being involved is a tremendous secret because usually it is against company policy. The reason for it is just what we talked about, the real world. The real world enters with all these prior relationships, and it has to be accommodated. You have to know how to really reach out and to maybe separate people, maybe get them to understand that what they're doing is disruptive to the group dynamic, right? That's why we have frequent breaks, and we use food as a tool. Food is a tool so that the participants can be thinking about something that's not going to cause them angst, and so the leader can come up and talk to them quietly and not in front of everybody to determine what it is that's happening and what we're going to do about it. Yeah, that's the ticket. That's why we have so many timeouts, so many breaks, where we have the food that we just discussed. Yes, it's so that we can do something that doesn't aggravate us. So, my friends, we are really out of time now. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. If you'd like to find us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website, recipeforpeacenow.com. If you would like to hear prior shows, they're archived on that website. Yes, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.